Cloud. So hello. So this is a series of podcasts that I have been doing, Parkinson's Care and Support UK. And today I'm slightly nervous, but overwhelmed and terribly excited because I've got the, I'm going to put a sir in front of your name already, Alex. Even
no.
though you, yeah, because that's
no,
how
you're jinxing me.
So I've got Alex Swim with me, who I have to add this. He's standing on the treadmill already. He's done a workout. Now, Alex, you put me to shame because we've both got a couple of things in common. One being we've both got Parkinson's and got it at a relatively young age. And two, we're massively into fitness. So this morning, I was feeling pretty good about myself. I'd done a couple of kettlebell classes. I'm like, yes, you know, I'm feeling great, doing a bit more on Monday. And then I look at Alex, who on Monday, the kettlebell class would just be like a warm-up for you because you were actually off to climb one hell of a mountain on Monday. So,
well, strictly speaking, I'm going to spend 7 days with my youngest son, who I haven't seen for a year and a half. He's going to be 10 in December, and I haven't seen him. He lives with my ex-wife in the south of France. So COVID got in the way of that. So I'm going to be spending dad and son time playing football and running around like a mad thing.
Yeah.
For a week, and that'll get me fit.
Yeah.
And then I'm going off to Chamonix to climb Mont Blanc, which is the first of three peaks before climbing Mount Everest and being first guy with Parkinson's to do so next year.
Yeah. I mean, which is, I mean, utterly incredible, I have to say, because for you, it's been a challenge. How did it all get started? Because I know fitness has been a massive part of your life before Parkinson's and after. So, you were diagnosed early. You were diagnosed aged in 2008. I think you were 36. Is that right?
Yeah, 36.
And with no family history or anything.
Not that I'm aware of.
No.
Not that I'm aware of. It's strange, but you know, at the time I was really fit. At the time I was running three half marathons a week, the old marathon the weekends, gym work on top of that, plus cycling 50 miles a day every day and doing my job and being a dad and being a husband and, you know, occasionally I'd find time to sleep. And, yeah, it came out of the blue. I just picked up a coffee cup and my little finger shook and I thought, I didn't do that.
And
I really didn't
symptoms.
Do that.
Yeah.
And then it kept coming back.
And was it quickly diagnosed, or given your age, did it go on for quite a while?
It was really quickly diagnosed because I went through my private medical insurance that I had with my company at the time, which really sped things up. Rather than just sitting on twiddling my thumbs and worrying about what I got, I was seen very quickly. And you know, one thing led to another, and I was diagnosed as idiopathic Parkinson's disease sufferer.
And how was that for you at the time? I mean, a huge shock, and given the amount of fitness that you were doing, which you're passionate about, I mean, did you think, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to give this all up, or what were your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts were I went into a really dark place.
Mm.
I didn't know what I was wanting to do. I didn't care. Life became devoid of meaning, apart from my kids and my wife, and my kids were the ones that saved me.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought to myself, if I can't help them, if I can't help myself, if I don't help myself, I can't help others. And that's where it started.
Mm. And how long did that take from you going from that very dark place? Because I think the difficulty with being diagnosed at such an early age is it is a huge shock, because everyone associates Parkinson's with, you know, 60 plus year olds, and we all have images of elderly people in our heads. And you know, where do you even begin, and what does life mean now? And you know, there's
I want to dispel people's ideas about that. The youngest ever diagnosed was a 2-year-old boy in 2016. You know, and everybody asks me, what's my why? That's my why.
Yeah.
You know, that makes me bloody angry.
Yeah.
And whatever that kid's going to go through, the stares, the judgments, everything that that child will go through is massively unfair.
Yeah.
And just shouldn't be, you know?
And I think what's so wonderful about you is that there are a huge amount of people still in a very dark place. And if you and others can help spread the word and show people that there is meaning to their lives, then
there's positivity.
Yeah, then that's massively going to help them. So when you sort of turned that corner and decided, okay, you know, for my kids, there's got to be a future. I've got to show them and I've got to show other people. And, you know, what was it, the exercise? Was it the fitness? You know, this makes me feel better and this is one aspect that I know I'm going to try and continue? Or
well, there wasn't anybody telling me to exercise, but I knew that if I didn't move that I would start to lose it.
Yeah.
So as a consequence, I had already signed up to do the Marathon des Sables.
Oh.
And I ran that race in 2009, and it was brutal. The biggest storms rose up from out of nowhere to hit the Sahara Desert in 12 years, and the amount of deluge of water was just ginormous. We had to reroute the course. We had to be evacuated by the Moroccan military. It was horrendous. And then I go and get myself lost in the Sahara Desert, 9.75 square miles of Sahara, with all the dried food in the world and 1.5 liters of water. And, yeah, I got myself out of that scrape, but I'm not going to tell you on this because I've written a book and I would like it to be a surprise.
Yes. Great.
Hurrah.
We'll talk about it, yeah. But the Marathon des Sables, I mean, to anyone who's fit and healthy, that's astonishing. So what were your symptoms at the time? What were you having to deal with? Because I know
just early stage tremor.
The tremor, yeah.
Tremor.
And were you on any medication?
And some dystonia. Okay. Yeah, just a little bit of amantadine with some risedulin.
Okay.
And now it's a whole cocktail. Yeah, it did. Amantadine is a horrible drug. It's disgusting to take. And if you don't take it with enough water, it sticks in your esophagus and it starts burning its way out. And, you know, just it's horrid, but it works well. It's an anti-influenza drug from the 60s. It's the same as Tamiflu. Yeah. And it works with early stage Parkinson's.
Yeah.
And smooths out tremor.
Yeah.
But I'm a little bit shaky at the moment because I've been going at it with the weights, and weights make you shake.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the weights you're doing make you shake. I don't know about the weights I do. It's a different ballpark. Oh, dear. But, so you've accomplished the Marathon des Sables, and then you just go on and decide, right, do you know what? I'm really going to start telling the world about Parkinson's. And because it's one of those diseases that I don't think is this not greatly talked about or known about. I mean, my mother and grandmother had Parkinson's, so I know about it because of them. But I think otherwise, I'd just think of it as, yeah, people that shake and that's it. But there's so many more elements to it. As you know, I mean, the things that you're having to deal with at the moment, I mean, are eating is one. You have trouble
eating. Eating can be interesting. My right arm will just suddenly spaz out and do its own thing, and you just got to laugh, really.
Yeah.
You know, if
there's
anything you can do.
Yeah.
And that's when I'm eating. Doesn't happen at other times, but just when I'm eating. Go
Which
figure.
No, that's very unfair.
Sleeping is hit and miss, and can be eventful.
And you mentioned night tremors, which I think is
night terrors.
I mean that's not a nice thing.
Not nice. They happen infrequently, but they do happen. And I've actually kicked out in my sleep and slammed my foot into the wall, which woke me up quite distinctly.
Yes.
So, yeah, so, you know.
At least you didn't kick anyone else.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. But, yeah, so I've been trying to up my exercise regime as much as I can and try and keep myself going, you know?
And when did the whole Everest, when did you think, I know, I'll take it from, you know, the marathon to Sabla, and you've also done some extreme running and other races and cycling. When did you decide I'm going to go for this one?
Well, since doing the first marathon de Sable and getting lost in the desert and having come out of the race early and then going back in 2010 and doing it, coming 529th out of over 1,100 competitors, then things started to ramp up and get a bit longer. Like running 160 miles across the Bavarian Alps in 52 hours with an hour and a half sleep. Then I ran 1,457 miles across Europe from London to Rome via Brussels and Paris. 400 miles of that was stress fracture right tibia, and did the first 20 marathons in 10 days. Then I crossed 3,256 miles of America in 35 days using four different disciplines, becoming the first guy to ever do so. I run the Amazon jungle, the Dolomites in Italy, and the Colorado Rockies within 8 weeks. And
okay, I'm definitely putting a star in front of your name.
And
that's insane.
So much more. And where do you go when you've crossed a couple of continents and run the Amazon jungle and the rest of it?
I'll tell you when I get there.
Yeah, you tend to pick the biggest thing around and you go up it.
But what?
So I did it up my stairs. I did it up my stairs.
Because you know Ed Jackson did the same.
Yeah, I did a vertical marathon, which was 2.3 times the height of Everest up my stairs.
Did you do that in lockdown?
Yeah.
Yeah, gosh.
But if it's 2.3 times up and 2.3 times down, that was 4.6 times the height of Everest up and down my stairs in 7.5 days in lockdown.
So people are going to be listening this and they need to up that game. But do you think it helps your Parkinson's? Because I've spoken to a couple of people that say that getting your adrenaline up really, really does help. And before we started the recording, you were talking about the benefits of fitness and exercise.
Yeah. So let me try and elaborate on that. When you've got Parkinson's, you have fluctuations in your endorphin levels, your serotonin levels, all your different hormones, all cock-a-doodly, you know, they're just all over the place.
Yeah.
And raising exercise doesn't just help you with your physical problems with Parkinson's. Obviously adds benefit to your fluidity of movement, because Parkinson's is about rigidity. It's not about anything else. It's about losing the ability to do the things that most people take for granted every day.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, that is one aspect of the benefit, and an important aspect of the benefit of exercise. But also hand in hand with that, it improves your mood, improves your well-being, improves the way you're feeling. You know, all those things are symbiotic to one another and therefore, you know, need to be addressed. And that can be addressed through exercise. But weight work doesn't really do the job for people with Parkinson's. But you need weight work to be able to carry your skeletal frame and to keep osteoporosis under control and other things that will happen as you age. But having cardiovascular exercise, running is incredibly good for Parkinson's. And if you can't run, walk, you can't walk, get a stationary spin bike and just go bananas on it once a day for 30 minutes.
And do you play music? Because for me, do you? I love that. Is that because you love singing or you're trying to help your muscles in your mouth as well? Because obviously that's one aspect of Parkinson's as well.
Yeah, both.
Both.
I'll sing in the shower every night.
Yeah.
Crap 80s music. I just said
oh, I love
put it.
It
on.
Oh, they're the best.
So.
That's the best. I put 80s tracks on when I'm teaching. No one knows the tune except me. But I think it's amazing, the singing and the music bit. I've got a lovely girl that I met called Shafak Ali, who's an NHS dentist, and she sings to her patients, and that's to help her vocal muscles as well. But I find when I play music as well, my movement is better.
Yeah, as well, because you attune to the rhythm of the music and you move on the rhythm.
Yeah.
And that helps you with Parkinson's, having a rhythm.
Definitely. Do you think that if you weren't doing this level of exercise, that your Parkinson's would be a lot worse?
I know for a fact.
Yeah.
I mean, in 2017, when my wife kindly told me that she didn't want to be with me anymore, my world at that point fell apart and I became homeless. Oh, technically, I was bankrupt at the time and really not in a good place. I've had to rebuild my life since. And that took my attention away from exercising and my symptoms and the stress, which is also a contributing factor to worsening Parkinson's, is stress. If you can get stress out of your life through meditation, through well-being, through other factors, through exercise, then you're a lot better. And my symptoms progressed exponentially.
I think that's a really, really fascinating and important point to raise. And I'm so sorry to hear that you had to go through all of that. But stress, really interestingly, in a webinar I recently did with other people with young onset Parkinson's, and there must have been about 30 people. And we all said, who has had not just your average stressful event, but who's had a properly stressful, traumatic event prior to getting Parkinson's? And nearly everyone put their hands up. And I thought, my God, so stress has played that significant a part to, not saying they wouldn't have got Parkinson's, but just bringing the symptoms out.
Mm.
So that's really interesting, because that's a hugely traumatic event for you to go through all of that.
Yeah, it was a learning. It was a learning curve, that's for sure.
And here you are, though, on the other side now. I mean, you must be so proud of yourself. You know, you're strong.
I don't think of myself that way. I don't say I'm proud of myself. I say that I'm doing okay and I can do better.
Well, I think there are a lot of people out there looking at you, thinking how incredibly proud they are of you for doing what you're doing and shedding a light on Parkinson's. So,
well, I hope it's my sons that do that.
Yeah.
Because I want my sons to be proud of me and say that Dad didn't give up.
No.
Simple as that.
And they will. And so how do people help you? Tell us more about the climb that you're doing. Because it's not just one. You're doing Mount Mira Peak in October. Then you've got
Mount Himalayan.
And then Everest comes in April 22.
Yeah.
So you've got a week in France next week, and then you start the Mont Blanc.
Yeah, which is technically a bit of a challenge and should be certainly an adventure.
And are you doing that as part of a team?
I'm doing that with my lead climber, Krish.
Okay.
And we're going to get up the mountain. We're going to stand on top of it and we're going to tick it off the list.
Yay! Fantastic. And then
I'm off to the Himalayas. Money finances willing, which is why I've got a GoFundMe page.
Yeah, yeah. So if people want to get behind you in order to raise awareness of Parkinson's, but also to help you achieve your dream, because I think lots of people out there would love to make this happen for you, how do they go about it? You said you've got a Just Giving page, so where would they go?
To my website, alexflynn.co.uk. There's a big button on the first page you come to.
Okay.
Click that and it'll take you to my GoFundMe page.
Okay, so they can donate there. And then what about this book?
I kind of started writing it in 2013 and finished it about a year ago. All about my 10 millimeters challenge, which took me from 2009 to 2013 and took me around the world. I mean, now I've run and raced and dragged myself across plus 30 countries, 6 different continents. I've raised awareness to 250 million people worldwide.
Yeah, incredible. You know, because that's the thing, you know, it's prevalent in every single country in the world.
It is. And 1 in 15 will get it within their lifetime. It is the fastest growing neurological disease in the world.
And do you think that the advances that they're making, there's you know, going to be a cure soon?
Well, it depends what you think a cure is.
Mm.
I think a cure would be the ability to stop Parkinson's in its tracks.
Yeah.
So that those with a familial history of it will never get Parkinson's.
Yeah.
We'll never have to go through what I'm going through and you're going through or anybody else is going through with Parkinson's.
Yeah.
But for me, having the ability to say, Alex, for the foreseeable, you're going to stay where you are right now forever. That would work for me.
Yeah, yeah.
That would work for me. That would be game changing.
Yeah.
Because then I can use all my exercise to work my butt off, get my hippocampus in my brain, producing lots of stem cells to repopulate my brain.
Yeah.
Robert's your father's brother. I will get better. That's my theory.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, actually. And I think for the majority of people I've spoken to, it's, you know, with young onset, they're managing it. But it's with Parkinson's, it's that slow progression. And so there's so many positive people out there and we're all living day to day and we're doing the best and we're exercising and we're doing what we can. But it's just, you know, unfortunately, at the moment, it is a progressive disease that does get worse. And
it is progressive and degenerative. And there are also, I think, different types of Parkinson's. Some are more aggressive than others.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? There are so many different types.
Mine has been very lucky. I've been very lucky in the fact that mine has been very slow progressing. And I think because of the exercise that I have done and will do, I'll continue to be able to do what I do for a little while longer. So that's top.
Yeah, that is really top. And I can share some good news with you because there is a centre being built with the University of Kent. It's going to be the first of its kind in the entire world. And this is with the charity Parkinson's Care and Support UK, who have teamed up with the University of Kent. And it's going to be a one-stop shop for everything to do with Parkinson's. So from the medical side to carers, to classes, to anything and everything you can think of to aid Parkinson's in one centre. Because I think the difficulty that some people find is they've got to go here for one thing, here for another. So it's all going to be under one roof. So I think advances like that are really, really going to help. But we can talk a bit more about that.
I think also, you know, the stance taken by other charities as well, like Parkinson's Foundation and Parkinson's UK joining forces to produce a virtual biotech, to produce therapies and treatments in years, not decades, because I think another particular charity says we're going to take decades to produce therapies. Well, you and I both know we don't have time.
No.
Time is not our friend.
No.
And to have that ability to be able to just shorten the period of conception of a treatment to efficacy and then production is absolutely crucial.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there are multiple different things going on. There's this guy in Australia, is it? I think it's Australia. And he's created this new deep brain stimulation, but without using massive electrodes into the brain, just something the size of a pea or a piece of rice that can be wirelessly charged in your brain. You know.
Gosh. Yeah, that is incredible.
Incredible. You know, and the way that we're going now with wearable things to stop dyskinesia and the rest of it is just superb. So to put people who may have neurological disease and Parkinson's in particular, to give them a sense of hope, there is hope. There are major steps forward, and I'm thinking that within the next 5 to 10 years, there are going to be significant strides into developing new treatments that will allow people to be able to live with Parkinson's much more easily than we do now.
And that is going to be hugely comforting to people listening to this. But I think, you know, these strides couldn't happen without people like you, to be fair, Alex, because in my mother's generation, when she had it, she died at age 75. Her generation, they didn't talk about it. They just kept it all bottled up and just got on with their life and didn't talk about it. And I think by people like you, who are so inspirational, shouting out to the world, people are going to listen and know more about it, and more advances are going to get made. And it's so important that we do talk about it and tell people. So, you know, I really couldn't thank you enough for getting out there and doing what you're doing.
Thanks, Vicky.
It's very inspirational. And also the fact that you're 2 years older than me. Oh my God.
Age is just a number.
I know. What that do I know? Yeah. But we all look up to you.
Thank you.
So what would you say to people listening who maybe have been recently diagnosed, or certainly in the last couple of years, and you've been in that low place, and if they're in that low place, are there any tips or advice that you could give to them to help try and lift them a bit?
Yeah, number one, you're not alone.
Yeah, I think that's a fundamental point.
You're not alone. Number two, exercise. Get out and move. It'll make you feel better. Yeah. It's amazing what you can do as a human being. Your body is built for movement.
Yeah.
Number three, life is what you make it.
Yeah.
If you sit around and you wait for it to come, it'll take you. Mm-hmm. Get up and fight the thing.
Yeah.
Life is an adventure. It's full of unknown, amazing opportunities that you've got to grab with both hands and take as far as you can possibly go. And seize that opportunity and open new doors and new adventures and new opportunities for yourself, and don't take no for an answer.
That is brilliant. So people, you are not alone. There are so many people going through the same things. Exercise and live that life. I think the universe out there wants us to achieve our destiny and do all these great things, and I think, Alex, you are just such an inspiration. So thank you so much for your time. Just one really quick last question. One of the areas I'm going to touch on in the future that I really need to look at is nutrition.
Yes.
Is that a massive, did you change? I mean, obviously, you're going to have a specific diet for the amount of exercise that you're doing. But do you eat certain foods for your Parkinson's, or is it more certain foods for the amount of exercise you're doing?
I think because I'm eating a lot of everything at the moment because I need the energy and the rest of it. That's fine. But I would look at removing things that cause inflammatory reflex, things that you're intolerant to. Getting intolerance test is very important.
Okay.
And getting rid of gluten.
Yeah. Okay.
And other things that cause inflammatory reflex in people.
Okay.
Because that's inflammation really speeds up the generation of neurons in the brain.
Yeah. And there's and that big link.
We can all do without it. There is a big link.
Inflammation in your gut is going to have a big impact on the neurons in your brain. Yeah. Okay.
And
that's
it's not
really
in your
helpful.
Gut, it'll cause brain inflammation as well.
Yeah. Right. So there you go. Some really, really helpful tips. Well, I mean, I'm going to love you and leave you and say, have you got lots of people supporting you and helping you on this?
Well, with your help, I will.
Yay! We're all behind you, Alex. Woo-woo! Sir Alex.
Thanks, Vicky.
Well, first of all, I hope you have the most fun week next week with your son. I mean, that's going to be hugely emotional and it's going to be brilliant. It's going to be a blast. And then secondly, you'll climb the following week and I'm going to be glued. Please post some pictures on Instagram so we can all see what you're up to, and we'll try and get as many people to support you. And I've already had so many people that can't wait to hear your story. So thank you for giving me a bit of your time, and maybe we could catch up again after you've done your climb. I'd love to hear how it
went. I'd love that.
Yay!
Thanks, Vicky.
That'd be great. Well, I wish you all the luck. Thank you so much. Have
Take
a great
care.
Weekend. All right.
Thank
good
you.
Luck. Bye.